Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy, and we appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we will review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and discuss issues related to the field of speech-language pathology.
You can use this podcast for ASHA professional development. For more information about us and certification maintenance hours, go to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to you in part by listeners like you. You can support our work by going to our website or social media pages and contributing. You can also find permanent products, notes, and other handouts, including a handout for this episode. Some items are free and others are not, but everything is affordable. You can also submit a call for papers on our website, www.slpnerdcast.com, to come on the show and present your work with us. You can contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
Just a quick disclaimer. The contents of this episode are not meant to replicate clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts and guests, do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episodes unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs. Well, Kate and I aren't. But we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and a fair representation of each topic that we tackle. With that being said, it's always likely that there's an article we've missed or another perspective that we haven't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We'd love to hear from you.
I love when you read that disclaimer and you sound like a guy from the 20s.
That's what
you
I'm like, well, I'm in my imagination. Like that's like,
you're like, it might cause a headache and I'm
twisting your little mustache or something. What are we talking about today, Amy?
I'm so excited today. We have the great pleasure of welcoming Dr. Narissa Hall and Hillary Jellison. Welcome, Narissa and Hillary of Communicare LLC.
Thank you so much for being here, guys.
Thank you.
So I want to tell the listeners, I am super excited to have these guys here because they have the weird honor, I guess, that they probably don't even want of being the creators of my favorite webinar ever. So if that's not a cool thing, I don't know what is.
For those of you who haven't seen Amy's persistent posts on social media about how much she loves the webinar that Hillary and Narissa created, you should go look at this. You should take this webinar. It's the most amazing webinar in the world in terms of our whole AAC universe and everything that we have had to learn in the last 6 months through COVID and participating in telepractice. Can you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do?
Sure. So Narissa and I are speech language pathologists who specialize with working with individuals who use AAC or different school districts or agencies, as well as assistive technology as well. So we have Communicare LLC, and we do assessments and consultation. We have trainings that we offer, and AAC camp we run in the summer. What did I miss, Narissa?
That's about it. Other than we just really love what we do, and we're really excited to talk more about it today. And we are definitely learning as we go, and the field of AAC is constantly evolving, surprising us, challenging us. And so it is a lifelong process, I feel, that we are very much a part of.
So you're here today to talk about tele-AAC as a continuum of service delivery. We've already gushed over our favorite webinar, but I'm curious, what is your favorite of your webinars? Is there like a webinar that you guys have, or a set of products isn't the right word, but resources or other things that you really feel like are your favorite pieces of work?
I really like our AAC communication partnership webinar, mostly because it really kind of steps us through talking about different communication partners for AAC and what strategies we've learned from running our AAC camp and training different communication partners. And it shows some aspects of our camp, which is always exciting to kind of reminisce on.
I definitely love camp. I think what I really enjoyed was the working with what you've got. I think we've really, when we think about tele-AAC in particular, we have kind of created something that happens in really optimal situations. And we know that that's not really life, especially when it comes to technology. And so we were really challenged to think creatively and coherently about how to still do the job that we love, even in less than optimal situations. So it was a fun opportunity for us to work together and creatively. So that, as much as I love watching camp, that was a intellectual challenge, that it was kind of that intellectual to practical bridge, which was really fun.
That's awesome. I, for one, just hearing about AAC camp sounds like an amazing experience all around. I think it's awesome that it gave you an intellectual challenge on top of it. I would really love to learn more about that in the future. Maybe that's a shameless plug for another upcoming episode. We can convince you guys to come back on here and be our nerdy friends on the SLP Nerdcast situation. Needless to say, we're embarrassingly excited for this topic. Before we dive right in, I need to read our financial and non-financial disclosures because Asha makes me do it. So financial disclosures, Hillary and Narissa are paid to provide consultation, intervention, training, and assessments in the areas of AAC, assistive technology, and tele-AAC. Kate Grandbois is the owner founder of Grandbois Therapy and Consulting, LLC, and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. Amy is an employee of a public school system and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. Non-financial disclosures, Hillary and Narissa are members of ASHA's Special Interest Group 12 and 18, which are respectively AAC and Telepractice Special Interest Groups, and RESNA. Kate and Amy are both members of ASHA SIG 12. We both serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. Kate is a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, otherwise known as BABIT, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group. I really hate reading those. They're like the most boring, right?
You did it. You did a good job, though. It was riveting.
Yeah.
Riveting.
Well, I think you've said that before. Yeah, anyways, learning objectives for today. So learning objective number one, identify the four major types of service delivery options. Learning objective number two, list at least three critical stakeholders involved in tele-AAC service delivery. And learning objective number three, list three benefits of asynchronous service delivery. I'm selfishly very excited for that last one.
I'm excited about all of them. And as our audience knows, Kate and I are both employed as AAC specialists. You can't see our air quotes. But we're so excited about this topic. Narissa and Hillary, please tell us all the things.
Okay, so let's start with the first thing. So when we are thinking about tele-AAC, there are a few major distinctions. So we have services that occur either synchronously in real time or asynchronously over time. And so that's one of the major, major distinctions. And we argue, and we'll continue to talk about it throughout our discussion today, that they are different but can be equally comparable. And when we think about service delivery in the context of AAC, it almost becomes a feature matching process. And we'll come back to that. But before I move away from that, so we have obviously the synchronous and asynchronous service delivery, as well as direct services and indirect services. Direct services being those services directly to an individual or indirectly to the team that supports them. Again, we feel strongly that although different, both are just as critical. And it shouldn't be viewed as an either or. You can already, just in kind of talking about it, see that they can really complement one another. There are things that can be done directly with an individual, but the individual we can then support generalization and implementation in ways that are just beyond fabulous when we think about working indirectly with the team. So it's important that we recognize the kinds of services, and then we start to also have flexibility around what that means. And we're going to spend today talking about shifting our thinking to looking at it as more of a continuum of service delivery. And someone may start with one and switch to another. Or when we think about eligibility, and we might say, oh, well, they're not a candidate based on a needs assessment because they can't directly touch the screen of a system or manipulate a mouse. No, they're absolutely a candidate for indirect, synchronous, or asynchronous services. And that may, in fact, be the better way to serve that individual. It may be less taxing, less daunting. It may mean that we're empowering a wider cohort of people that then can really truly understand how to support that individual. So we feel very strongly about that. We're certainly not denying that there are candidacy requirements and or candidacy suggestions, and there we need a needs assessment and all sorts of things like that. But what we are going to continue to hit home today is just to have flexible thinking around service delivery for individuals with complex communication needs using AAC.
I first of all, the concept of eligibility, I think that is such an unbelievably important and huge point, and I'm so excited to talk more about that. But I also have a question, and our listeners are familiar enough with me by now to know that I ask a lot of questions because sometimes I just don't know everything. Is there such a thing as asynchronous direct service?
Yes, there is.
What is that in my mind, which is obviously wrong? Asynchronous is always indirect.
No. So we've done it, especially if you don't have a kiddo that maybe can sit still at the time that you have availability, or the parent has other kids at home or different things going on, you could record a lesson or record something for that student to watch and participate with the communication partner, and then have the communication partner kind of record that and then share it with you. And then you would then meet with them to review how it went or what might go differently is the way that we've done that.
It's almost, almost like a flipped classroom idea.
And not to overly plug your webinar, I promise this is the last one. There were some really nice examples. There were some really nice video examples of exactly that, exactly your question, which as somebody, we were talking before we started recording just about how, you know, being somebody who learns well from listening or other things, I personally like to see examples of things if I'm trying to conceptualize something. And that was very helpful for me to see, oh, that's actually what it would look like. That's actually what it would look like for a family to receive sort of this pre-recorded asynchronous content and then have them engage in an activity with their child, record that, and kind of forward it back to the SLP, who's then able to have this conversation afterwards, a synchronous indirect conversation later with the family and kind of combine all of those different modalities. So if you are someone who likes to see an example, just saying, check it out.
And I was just about to say, this is obviously recorded non-visual presentation, but your webinar, we didn't say before, is worth 0.4 ASHA CEUs on top of it. So if you would like to learn more about that and see the visuals, you can get 4 hours of continuing ed that goes directly into your ASHA CE registry. So kudos. Continue.
Just to that point too, I think what we have found for that asynchronous direct service too, is almost like and under the same concept of the flipped classroom, like it allows the time that we have together to be very targeted. And so, you know, think of the example, a working parent that, you know, you send a little video and an explanation and say, hey, I suggest that you try this. You know, our hours don't quite work because the parents come back, you know, at 6 o'clock at night and the session, we wouldn't necessarily be having a session then. Then they try it, send something back, and then we get to talk in real time reflecting on something that had occurred, but we're both looking at the shared reference. So rather than saying, oh, I want you to think about doing it like this and let me demonstrate it. I've already demonstrated it. I've sent it. I've given it over. She's, you know, the parent has viewed it. And now we can actually talk really effectively, get right to the point. And so I think that we can't underestimate the value of that kind of flexibility in terms of really just helping us be more hyper focused.
And it was also a great troubleshoot when the internet connectivity was an issue, because we could then even connect via a phone call after, kind of reflecting on that video that we had shared back and forth.
That's awesome.
I think too, one thing that was helpful for me in thinking about this continuum and feature matching, you know, feature matching is something we're so familiar with in the field of assistive technology and AAC. So sort of to apply that same framework to the considerations around service delivery made a lot of sense to me. And it's something that a lot of us, you know, I work in a public school right now, and we're doing that when we're crafting somebody's IEP, right? We're thinking about the service in the different environments. And so for me, I feel like it maps kind of similarly to that. Like, so you may provide consultation to the team. You may provide, you know, some C grid service. You may provide B grid service. And all of those things together are what, you know, sort of formulates your package. So this whole idea of it being a continuum that's not necessarily stand alone either. It doesn't have to be one or the other, I thought was very helpful information to have.
And you're doing the feature matching based not just on the individual. Like when we look at an IEP, right, we're basing it off of that individual. But when we're thinking about Tela in these different situations, it's the individual as well as their environment and their communication partner and their access to the technology. And I think that's the piece that just takes a little bit more forethought. But then once you get a plan together, it works pretty well.
Okay, so I think in order to talk more, so I think maybe as I generally do, just like jump right ahead, but I think some of the nuts and bolts of Tela AAC, just for listeners that may not be as familiar or, you know, have a picture of it, obviously we're getting more and more familiar with telepractice and this online service delivery. The thing that really distinguishes Tela AAC from telepractice is the fact that you are adding in this AAC component. And so, and when we say AAC or an AAC system, we are meaning light tech, high tech, all AAC. So it really, it's not just restricted to high tech systems. And so what this does to a Tela environment is that it makes, we need to be able to have eyes on a system. We have to be able to see. So it is one extra layer of technical complexity in terms of needing to be able to view how an individual is using a system and also share visual information about how to use that system. So that's really the distinguishing element of when we talk specifically about Tela AAC. And so when we think about a telepractice setup, we can picture what we all can traditionally think of as like a FaceTime call or a Skype call or a Zoom call. What has to happen in a Tela environment is that we need to also account for the device to kind of enter that meeting. So how do we also have, you know, now there are four of us talking, but if one of us was an AAC user, there would be five of us here, because that AAC system would serve as, it would have its own seat in a telepractice session. So hopefully we're kind of creating a picture of what this looks like structurally in terms of the service. So there are some technical elements to account for. But something that we do, and we also have this information on our website, because sometimes seeing is believing, and just to be able to see, oh, okay, now I see what you mean. It's important to kind of get that picture. But why it's important for us to think about this as we think about a continuum of service delivery is that we're always worrying about the sharing of visual information. So even when we're thinking asynchronously, how can we store a visual tidbit to forward. That's what asynchronous is, store and forward. How can we share that visual information? And then when we start to think about many of the mainstream things that we do, like taking a video and texting it or sharing a screenshot of something, it starts to just, we are already doing this. We're doing it so fluently amongst ourselves as communicators. It's literally just an extension in the clinical realm. And it might not feel that fancy, but what we see is, boy, is it effective. So being able to take a video of how I would generate a target phrase or find those adjectives or increase my length of utterance, and then I'm sharing it to either the individual directly or indirectly to the individual's team, they are getting a highly customized video modeling program specifically related to their AAC use. And so it becomes a very effective way of talking AAC to people who aren't, you know, who are into learning about AAC. So it's just, you know, I think it's a lot of what we're doing. It's just leveraging it for goal stuff.
I'm having that moment where your brain sort of explodes a little bit, but like, oh my gosh, I didn't think of it that way before. And I do this for a living. So having a humbling moment in public, it's cool. The concept of, I mean, how many videos have I sent like friends or family of my kids, or you do it without thinking of it? The applying, like looking at tele AAC through that lens, that just removes so much of the mystery. And yes, there's other components like HIPAA compliance and all that. I mean, I know that it's not exactly the same, but it's so parallel that when you look at it through that lens, it goes from, at least for me, it goes from the super intimidating, I don't know how to do this, to like, oh wait, I'm doing this already as a human, and I'm just now have to do it with my clinical skills. That makes so much sense.
And don't get me on my soapbox about how we don't recognize the power of async. I mean, currently is not viewed as effective as synchronous services, but arguably you're getting these highly customized video modeling programs that are clinically driven uniquely for an individual. It's like gold at your fingertips. I mean, it's just a wealth of stuff.
Not only that, I can see Amy's enthusiasm arms over our phone call here. Not only that, but you, by doing asynchronous video sharing, you're sort of, without meaning to, removing a whole bunch of barriers like time and scheduling and attention. I mean, I'm a parent. When I have to have a conversation and my child is there, I'm distracted. You have a medically complex child, or you have a child with motor or sensory needs, or any sort of difference, you know, and you're in a therapy session and you have 15 minutes and you have to use that 15 minutes to talk to your speech pathologist, and that's all you get. That's not necessarily great use of your time, or, you know, a great use of your attention. I feel like this component or idea of sharing video opens up so many more opportunities for communication partners, for speech pathologists. I mean, I could go on and on about it. Soapbox warranted.
Soapbox, totally. I am stepping. I agree with your soapbox. I will support your soapbox on the bottom.
On the soapbox.
I'm on the soapbox because I think that asynchronous supports suffer from some of the same problems that consultation suffers from.
Yes.
Where it's such a vital service. And in some ways, Kate and I have had like many of these conversations where I think oftentimes the consultation is more meaningful and more impactful than a brief direct service would be. And I feel like asynchronous is in the same boat. I can see so many merits. I mean, another huge benefit to asynchronous is that it lives there forever. So if I forget what it was, yes. Like I can go back to that over and over and over. I don't have to feel embarrassed that I asked the same question 5 times. I don't have to feel uncomfortable. I can remember 5 months in the future that, oh, that's right, Hillary sent me this video, and I can look that up myself. And soapbox agreed.
Soapbox.
And when you have
your turn.
Thanks. And when you have more than one communication partner, you can share that same video with the dad or the sister or the grandmother or whoever. And that message is then being multiplied and generalization is occurring versus just that one person who heard it. And then you get the telephone game of when you get home explaining exactly what the clinician may have said, but now you can actually see it as well.
I know we mentioned this in a previous episode, I think about service delivery models, but it's really a shame that we don't necessarily have funding for indirect service in terms of covered services through insurance or depending on what your funding source is. If there are any listeners out there who feel like putting more boots on the ground or starting some sort of grassroots movement to advocate and get more funding covered, for indirect service and some of these asynchronous kinds of things. I'm hoping that, you know, we're recording this at the end of August in 2020. COVID is still active and it's terrible in so many ways, but I'm hoping that one silver lining of that is sort of clinicians being forced to use these modalities and embrace them and learn and see firsthand the benefits of them and then do more advocacy work to get them covered.
Yeah. So I think absolutely. And I think now let's start to like put that in the context of some of these really complex learners. And I think that also starts to further substantiate why we need to look at tele-AAC in particular as a continuum of service delivery. So I have someone that has, you know, cerebral palsy, is in a wheelchair, is maybe using one or two step scanning to be able to access a partner assisted scanning tool. The technological competence needed there is off the charts. Like that's just really high tech stuff. That's complicated. There are lots of things that can go wrong and many things that can go right. Direct service delivery for an individual like that is really challenging. And in terms of like accessing content on a screen, and then add in potentially a cortical visual impairment or, fatigue or, physical discomfort or something like that. It's not fair for that individual not to get access to services, especially when you can work directly with potential in the context of working with him, a caregiver or someone that is just learning the system, or even if you don't even have to worry about the AAC technology, you can start to coach them through what partner assisted scanning looks like. I mean, we're starting to tap into quality of life. In the absence of not working with that individual, they have nothing. And so it's just not okay to not be creative or to work to provide the individuals with access to high quality consultative or intervention services.
And the other way of kind of thinking of it is when we're talking about these services, our goal is communication. Our goal is helping to support communication in that environment. And instead of making the goal the technology and sitting in front of this screen and increasing the behaviors, you know, that's not the goal. The goal is not managing those extra behaviors just due to the manner in which the services are provided. The goal is communication. And so that asynchronous model allows you to maybe avoid some of those increased behaviors for a task that the ability to sit in front of a computer as of right now, well, maybe a little bit more right now, isn't a life skill.
Right. I think a good point, Hillary, that you bring up too. I think even if we look through the lens of, okay, I have someone that presents that they could be an appropriate candidate for a direct tele-AAC, something that's it's also clinically nuanced in the sense that different settings and environments will lend themselves to different goals. So as clinicians, we also need to think about, okay, we always have to ask that question, what's the goal of the task here? We were really challenged to think about this in our AAC camp that we just did, where we offered asynchronous pre-recorded content. We also had large group sessions, and then we had small group sessions as well as individual sessions. And for each of those different scenarios, the goals were different. So in an asynchronous pre-recorded lesson that has embedded icons, we're worrying about vocabulary and exposure. It doesn't necessarily have to lend itself to a manding program or a tacting program, but it's just this iconicity exposure. It is an opportunity to kind of see AAC brought to life in a variety of activities. Then we move into a large group setting. This is not the we don't have time on our side in the sense that this is an opportunity to now work on increasing length of utterance. This is all about social. This is greetings, partings, maybe hitting a pre-recorded joke, or even just being present and watching other people and just tolerating being present. Then we switch to a small group. Okay, well, now we've got a little bit more instructional control. We can manage variables a little bit better. I might now work on initiating or responding or a WH question. Maybe a little bit of greeting and parting, but I'm going to expect potentially a little bit more engagement. Then we go to one-on-one and boom, sure, let's go to increased length of utterance. Let's up the ante. Let's delve into the specificities of that individual's unique overlay or how they're using it or work with their communication partner. So I think it's still really important to think, like, even in doing tele AAC synchronously, it still has to be nuanced.
And then jumping off of what you're saying, Nerissa, related to camp, we had different cohorts of age range or language ability. So my group was our emergent communicators. Even our individual, you know, live sessions were not fully direct with the child. It was maybe we would get 5 minutes or 10 minutes that were gold, that were that direct with the child. And the rest of the session was that indirect talking with the communication partner. Okay, now let's brainstorm. How are you going to take what we worked on and generalize throughout the day? Where we might have some of those kids that are older, or even in that emergent group, that were able to participate directly for the 15 or you know, 30 minutes. But it varied based on the individual. And to be honest, it varied based on the day. If they weren't sleeping the night before and were having tons of behaviors, we again were kind of switching what that mode looked like.
And I'm just sort of, you know, thinking about all of these amazing benefits of asynchronous service delivery that we're identifying, and sort of thinking back to our learning objectives and that, and what you just said about the stakeholders and what you can do with the communication partners. And, you know, rereading our second learning objective list at least three critical stakeholders involved in tele AAC. And I'm wondering, you know, in terms of the interaction between asynchronous service delivery and the, as we know, the incredibly important role of stakeholders and communication partners, how those two things link up and which communication partners and stakeholders you feel benefit from that modality the most.
Absolutely. So, and it's interesting that you bring it up, because I'm like, wow, this is leading to the next part, in the sense that
wasn't an accident.
Touche. Nice one. Well, bam, here we go. So when we think about AAC in general, we obviously have, I mean, we know in all the literature about how important, how it's a team process, you know. So we obviously have the individual, their caregivers, educators, related service personnel, and things like that. When we start to come into the lens of tele AAC, I mean, some of the most pertinent and important stakeholders, obviously the individual, but now we have, especially in a tele environment, we become super reliant on the communication partners in ways that this is where it's fundamentally different. Why we got into tele was that we would go in for a consult and then our really important stakeholders would go. They'd go to the bathroom, they'd go photocopying, or they'd be pinch hitting for someone else. And we're like, whoa, like, come back here.
All the enthusiasm arms. No one can see us. Amy and I are like nodding our heads. This is like such good stuff. Keep going. I'm just so enthusiastically agreeing with you. I had to say something.
So yeah. So now here we are, where the communication partner, whether or not it be a parent, a paraprofessional, a sibling, a teacher, an SLPA, a PT. I mean, there are way more than three. In the context of working with an individual, are simultaneously incorporating the skills, the very skills that we're trying to work on. Our approach changes, and what we've learned, and it's been a common theme as we reflect on camp, is be explicit, like be explicit. So, you know, what we would have obviously, like before, modeled appropriate kind of prompting and varied it, we now have to say, hey, Jane, I need you to hover over the apple. Or go to here, or watch me here. And so we really kind of bring it to intention. Like, we kind of now start to like really make it salient, and we're not the ones doing it. It's the individual and their communication partner doing it.
I call it backseat driving. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
But we are, and you're using a lot of the specific terminology. In a tele-environment,
right? What? It's backseat driving in a tele-environment.
Right, right, right. Yes. Yes, I'm not literally in their living room sitting behind them. Sorry, thought that was assumed. But we're very specific about it. Like Narissa said, like not just like hover over, okay, we're going to give a point prompt. So your point prompt that you're going to do is you're going to, you know, just point it. Remember, we're not saying anything here. But what happens is you can't say that in the middle of a session, or you're going to lose the individual using AAC. So that's where you almost have these, before the session starts, you're like, okay, so today this is the strategy we're working on. Or remember last time, we're still working on this strategy. Here's how you do it. And then at the end, you reflect back on it. So it's so explicit.
And I think for me, that is one of the other big differences. You were talking about, you know, the reliance on the partner. I think another big difference with tele, having done it for like 3 seconds, so who knows, but is the idea that I feel like I need to plan more. I need to plan a lot more than I would as somebody who, you know, I've been doing this for a while. And so particularly with my more emergent communicators, a lot of my session was like, my plan was the overall, like whatever we're working on, but then I was going to follow their lead as far as, I don't know, what are you into today? All right, well, we'll have fun about that. And we'll work on this vocabulary in some way in the context of this meaningful activity. Right. And I think when you're and maybe it's just my being an ultra novice, but it seems like there needs to be a lot more thought and structure that goes into it ahead of time. And I think that might also be where some of those asynchronous supports come into. Like maybe you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll just make a prompting video so I can send that ahead of time so then they can see it and then we can talk about it. But that's different than what my service would normally look like.
But why? Why is it different? Like, shouldn't we be being this explicit in our...
Such a good point.
It's such a good point. Well, and if you think about, like, we've done a couple of episodes where we've looked more at the partner training. And when you look at people who are doing it in research, that is what they're doing. And then you're like, oh, but that's research and that's like impossible. But maybe it's not. Like, maybe it's not impossible. And maybe we should be rethinking all of these things.
Silver lining.
Silver lining.
COVID. Mm.
I feel like we need like snaps or something.
Because we're in chorus, you mean?
Yeah.
We could sing a song about it. That would be fun. Take it away, Aim.
No, I was going to have you do that.
So I think, you know, so we can see how in a direct synchronous, how critical the communication partner comes. And I would say that arguably that still remains in an asynchronous environment too, in terms of the fact that they can then implement it. We saw that with having pre-recorded a lot of our lessons, we had to explicitly describe how we intended them to be implemented. And once we got over that, it provided a tailored AAC-centric tool that the communication partner and the individual could do outside of the context of us even being there. And that, again, is part of our ultimate goal. So, you know, I think that it is also very powerful in an asynchronous store and forward. I mean, we can still affect the and help work collaboratively with the communication partners. So either in vivo in the context of a direct session, or, you know, over time through these like really highly tailored resources, or just really directed, even if it's, using a favorite book that isn't customized to include AAC symbols or something like that, but we could provide clinical guidance as to how that would be implemented and then say, hey, check back in with us. Let us know how it went.
I have a question about just your work style as people are moving forward and we don't know how long some of us are going to be using telehealth. And maybe you guys have some reflections on this from your time doing camp, but are you using, I know you mentioned, and in the webinar, you talked about these very individualized asynchronous supports. Are you also building something like that? Do you kind of do a combination of highly individualized things that are specific to one client, one learner, but then maybe also sort of generic enough supports that you're able to reuse them in the future without having to reinvent the wheel? Or is that a dream that I have?
No, it's not a dream. We can run our 5-week camp over and over again because we've got all that material already made and they are generic and general. In general, we differentiate by two to three different symbol sets. So a lot of our materials have been made with either symbol sticks and or Pixons, Minspy, Prankyramic. So we kind of had those major distinctions just based on the cohorts that we worked with. And I think Hillary, in listening to some presentation that she was doing yesterday, talked really clearly, and maybe you can back me up here, Hillary, as I flounder through this, but just in terms of we embed the icons into these dynamic materials, not to serve as a visual prompt for explicit AAC use, but to incorporate AAC in these indirect ways, which is also very, very powerful. I mean, from a psychosocial standpoint of being able to see the words and the language and the pictures that you use embedded in contact, like, please, everyone's deserving of that. But then also in some of these really generic resources, it also demonstrates clinical engagement.
All right, sorry. I have two things that I'm hoping to hold in my head from what you said. So the first way I talked about it was we're basically virtually engineering the environment, right? That's one of our huge strategies for AAC implementation is to let's engineer the environment. Let's put visuals around the environment. Not that we're saying this is a door, but like open, go out. And so what we're doing is then just putting that within some of our, you know, asynchronous materials. The other piece of it was when we were recording materials for camp, sorry, a picture of the materials from camp popped into my head that made me laugh. But when we were recording the materials for camp, we had to think about, okay, in this scenario, what is our goal? And our goal was really helping communication partners at the same time as targeting skills for the individual who's using AAC to think about how to use language in multiple different ways. So it wasn't requesting, it was commenting. So the visuals, the icons that we're putting into it wasn't just what we want the student to say, but kind of like a where or wow, yikes, you know, modeling some of that language. And the feedback we received is that was really helpful for the visual, for the communication partner to visually see it as well as kind of see those examples into it. And so we definitely toyed on it back and forth. Sorry, completely going off on a tangent. So pull me back if need be. But like for visual supports in the materials, we had real photos for some of them because we wanted to make sure we were helping with that receptive understanding piece of it and attention. So it's just really important for the communication partner to see it, but then also visually see those icons, but then see those examples. But we went back and forth because typically in an individual session, we might use a sequence of icons, and we didn't do that because we had so many different communication devices or different vocabulary. And so we're just kind of using that, the icon more as a visual representation to kind of meet those different needs.
And I just think that this, it's such a good point. You know, we know in the world of AAC that the role of the communication partner and the stakeholder is like so massive, often overlooked, unfortunately, or difficult to access because of lack of funding or scheduling or any, you know, name a hurdle. There's a million of them. But in terms of, you know, using this modality of tele-AAC to get access to the communication partner, in conjunction with seeing your communication partner as a person who is also learning. So, you know, as clinicians, we're trained to, you know, zones of proximal development, meet someone where they are, and yet somehow that gets lost so often when we're talking about AAC and communication partners, because AAC for a lot of people is not natural. It is clunky. It's intimidating. It's, you know, you name it, you know, the laundry list of things. And so just the simple idea of having it being helpful for the communication partner to see the visual, because they are also learning, you know, they are also participating with their student or daughter or son or, you know, whoever, however they are as a caregiver or a stakeholder or a communication partner. And I think that that's just, I mean, we now have a pile of reasons why asynchronous service and tele-AAC is super important, but you can just add that right onto the pile. The AA, the communication partner is also a learner. And I think that's unbelievably such a good point.
How many soapboxes can you collect?
I think that we're still, it's just one soapbox. It's the asynchronous soapbox.
I think it's also the partner soapbox.
The partners. Okay,
I mean, maybe that's like a soapbox off the side of the other soapbox. Maybe the soapboxes are like stairs.
It can be a collection of soapboxes. They're both very important. Yeah. I support that choice.
I love, and I wrote in big quotes on a big piece of paper next to me, zones of proximal development for communication partners. I think that's huge.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's, I think it's relevant across the clinical practice of a speech pathologist forever, for anything that you're doing, no matter what, you know, clinical field you're working in. And maybe this is my bias because I work as a quote AAC specialist, but I think in AAC in particular, there are many more, there's a bigger learning curve, maybe not bigger, but there is definitely a big learning curve in terms of equipment and teaching instruction. And so, you know, working with your communication partner in a place where they, meeting them where they are and dropping the breadcrumbs and, you know, teaching them as well. Instead of, and this is, you know, we all look back on, as Amy says, long in the tooth, you know, we all look back on our newly graduated selves. And I think of myself as a clinician and my first, you know, handful of AAC clients. Oh boy, I just dropped a bomb on those poor parents. You know, here's your device. This is what you do. Model all the time. Okay, thanks. Bye. You know, it's a lot. It really is a lot. And I think it's so important to think of it through that lens of teaching.
And I think even, I mean, I hope what comes from this too is that even when we are no longer in the midst of COVID, that tele prevails because it is such a powerful way to support communication partners and individuals simultaneously, and communication partners, like multiple, not just the mm-hmm. one-to-one in the school environment or the two because you have to switch out, you know. I know we said it before, or at least I think we did. We, you know, the sudden shutdown of COVID showed massive pitfalls in terms of our authentic incorporation and involvement of families. And, you know, they all of a sudden had to do things. And, you know, even individuals that have had systems for years are still like, wait, what? I've never seen a session. I don't know what this means. Like, we worked in silos. And, you know, I think tele breaks that down and can support generalization in really profound ways.
And I know, Narissa, what you said made me think of, you've done tele AAC previous to COVID so many times, even with outside clinicians. So kind of being able to unite that outside clinician with the school clinician and the consultant. And that was huge.
Collaboration everywhere, collaboration over competition, mm-hmm. collaboration over tele. I mean, it's a bridge. It's huge.
And also Kate, you had mentioned like even just the breadcrumbs, or it's a process. So, you know, we often say, okay, we're going to bring in training. We'll have this one-time training and maybe a follow-up in 3 to 6 months. It's not the way it I mean, until you're applying it, you don't really have the question. So when we think back to that continuum of support, even if someone is a candidate for direct AAC intervention via tele, there should still be an indirect option to support generalization and communication partner involvement. So again, it's not either or. It's not you're in one of the four quadrants. It could, you know, going back to Amy's point too about the grid, like a combination of A, B, and C works really well. When it comes to tele, we've got A, B, C, D, and a combination of A, B, C, D works really well. Some may be really heavy in the D box because due to access or attention, but they still, you know, may benefit from elements of A, and, you know, vice versa. And so through our practice, we are doing tele with individuals of all ages. I mean, if we just reflect on camp alone, we did tele AAC for 5 weeks with individuals ranging from the age of 4 to 21. We went from individuals who were using two-step scanning or just a single switch to direct selection of an 84-button grid or, you know, letter-by-letter novel writing. I mean, like, tele was able to accommodate all of them.
But I argue that we didn't do tele. We did AAC and communication services through the mode of tele.
Absolutely.
I think another piece that's super important and empowering about thinking about this continuum of service delivery, again, like you said, outside of COVID times, is the opportunity to help people across multiple environments. And Kate and I have talked a lot about, you may be an aided communicator who uses your high-tech tool for a lot of different tasks, but that doesn't mean you're going to use it all the time for everything. And so, you know, the idea of a communication system instead of one communication tool. And if you have communication partners who are having trouble troubleshooting what that might look like in a different environment, this modality gives the clinician an ability to help better understand the needs of the environment and support that those interactions in a way that nothing else does.
Yeah. You bring up such a great point too. I think something that we haven't talked too much about, but is that it's also not always about the high tech. So, you know, not only in life, but also in service delivery. And, you know, I think if I reflect on what was successful for many of our individuals was we also had things like comment cards or language boards that, you know, it wasn't always going back to like, what's the goal of the task? Or, and as Hillary, you know, helped us remember, it's about communication. So I can lift up a card and I'm communicating and I'm not worrying about, am I on the right page? Is it interfacing? Do you have eyes on? You know, I'm still here, I'm engaged. And so you want to use a variety of methods to communicate, and that will also ultimately help the success of the sessions. So absolutely.
So, and, you know, our listeners can't see, but Hillary is holding up these cards because, you know, we're recording this over Zoom. If our listeners cruise on over to your website, I'm assuming that these, you know, they can participate in a webinar and sort of get a visual for how this looks.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, good. Only because I mean, again, like the visual component, I'm learning. I needed a visual support. That's okay. You know, I think that it's really great to see all of those things intersect.
Yeah. A lot of our stuff is hiding under our camp curriculum, hidden password protected areas. More and more of that, I mean, it's can be seen certainly in our case studies and those different webinars, but we certainly are an email away, or people often say, hey, do you have that? And that stuff will slowly be coming out as we find the time and make the time to have that be more available. Because the ultimate goal is for it to be, there's nothing really proprietary here. It's about ensuring that people get access to good quality care and that they're supported. And the last thing we want is for people to say, oh, I can't do it because I don't have it. no, you can, and we'll make sure you have it. And you can do it with even just a phone and a whiteboard. You can still do tele.
I would like one of those cards for when we record. I think just thinking about multimodality communication, I don't know how many of the listeners have sat in a Zoom meeting, and that's it. Before we started recording, we had this whole conversation about, if I have something to say, I'm going to raise my hand so we're not talking over one another and the audio is not clipping out. I think a lot of these strategies are just part of a continuum of supports that could be helpful. In general, it's a little bit of universal design. We're all learning this new way of interacting, having a meeting. So some of these ideas I can see, you know, as soon as Hillary, you were holding those signs up, I was thinking like, oh, this is huge for groups no matter what. This would be huge for a group. It would be helpful for any group. So just that type of flexible thinking and thinking about your environment. And this is a funny, like when we spoke with Joy Zabala, she was saying how this is the new classroom environment, right? We're all in this funny, new, weird environment that we're kind of there, kind of not. So there are tools and tricks that are probably helpful for a much broader audience.
And in this new environment that's devoid of contextual communication because it's two-dimensional, you know, I keep thinking of, you know, when you would be in a meeting and someone be going on and on and you just sort of like close your notebook and give them all the cues that it's time to wrap it up, you know, all those things are gone now, right? And here we are, not only in educational environments, but therapeutic environments. And I think all of these, you know, taking pieces of tele AAC, even in an articulation session. I mean, there's so much about communicating through technology that is lost that you really need to get creative with. And I think that some of these, you know, some of these strategies are brilliant. Okay, so we've identified, you know, I'm just like, you know, thinking about all of the things that I have learned in sitting here talking with you guys. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway is, well, I have too many takeaways, actually. We have our soapbox of the importance of asynchronous service delivery. And then we have the soapbox of the importance of the stakeholder and the communication partner, but also how those two things are bridged. So we have our two soapboxes with like maybe a log on top.
Absolutely.
Like a bridge between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totes. A log bridge.
So I think, you know, we can talk really vigorously and in exciting tangential ways about, you know, all this stuff. But I think kind of coming back to what our intention is to talk about today, I mean, we have talked about, hopefully we can picture how this is more of a fluid service, feature matching service delivery option. We have our major categories, but they're all beneficial and for different reasons for different individuals. So it's worth exploring that. Tele AAC in particular really allows us to incorporate those really important pertinent communication partners. So if we think about in the current environment, it's obviously the individual, potentially an educator or a para and or the parent. I think we almost envision the circles, you know, circles of kind of who are those really critical communication partners. And they're all really important. But something that has emerged is this very unique opportunity to involve the individual and their caregivers in ways that we've never been able to do before. And that this can simultaneously be done in the context of working with a primary communication partner, like a paraprofessional who may hold down the fort, who is so critical in a school environment. So I think we really picture the involvement of the school-based primary care communication partners, whether or not that's a para or an educator or a special educator, or maybe the speech pathologist who isn't as familiar with AAC, as well as the home-based primary caregivers. And in some cases, that might be a sibling or it might be a grandparent. So it really will vary, but we can bring them to the same session.
And I have a question sort of coming full circle to the beginning of this episode related to the continuum of service delivery and the concept of eligibility versus candidacy. And I wonder if you could talk about that just a little bit in the last few minutes.
So I will, yeah, I mean, when I explored this as, you know, as part of my research, we said you had to have candidacy criteria. You had to have an attention span of, boom, you had to be able to directly manipulate the computer. You had to, it was kind of like these almost, I hate to use the word, but prerequisite skills to be able to gain content in a tele environment. We knew that there was consultation, but it was thought that that was kind of directly just to adults that wanted to talk about that individual. The more and more we practiced it, we realized that it's so much more nuanced than that, and also so much more powerful than that if we can start to intersect the individual and their communication partner. So I think when we talk about eligibility in the sense that, and Hillary, correct me at any point, I almost feel like anyone's eligible. Well,
you know how they say, what are the prerequisites for an AAC system? Can you breathe? Yes. Woohoo! You got it. It's the same kind of
exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. So it's basically there is an eligibility to access service deliveries in this method, and then to shift the way that we think about candidacy in the sense of more feature matching. So if everyone could benefit from it, how will they benefit from it? So it may not be in direct synchronous, it may be through indirect or asynchronous or a combination. So I think it's just that what was a more like this inclusionary exclusionary balance is gone to more of a feature matching.
And when you say, and I'm just saying this for our listeners who might not be as familiar with AAC evaluations and the feature matching process in general, when you say feature matching, you mean you have your, you know, four major types of service delivery options: synchronous, asynchronous, direct, and indirect, and matching combinations of those to the individual needs based on a myriad of factors, anything from system to identified areas of need, referral source, language goals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the individual, what do they bring uniquely? You know, what is their unique learning and communication profile and access profile that they come to the table with? And then how is the service going to work around? How is it going to best match what they need?
And I think in this model,
it's the other way around.
This model also, you're looking at feature matching the individual and their communication partner.
I love that. I love that. That's amazing. Enthusiasm fingers and arms. Making lots of movements.
And I feel like connected with that, we've talked a lot too about the environment. And then there's the tech. And so there are a lot of different variables that kind of come into that feature matching process. It does, I guess that's another place too, where this the tele element of it does add some additional considerations and layers. Yeah, I love the continuum a lot.
So before we wrap up, we try to always leave our listeners with additional places to seek information. There's obviously your website, which we will post on the episode. The website will be in the show notes and on the episode page on our website. Are there any other big resources that you would like to direct our listeners to, and we can post links to those resources, anything from a research article to an online resource?
So I was just thinking, on our website, you can sign up to get our Tech Tuesdays, which are our tips related to AAC or AT. And so kind of reflecting back to those more generalized resources, we try to kind of share those each Tuesday on our Tech Tuesdays as well.
Love that.
And just for our listeners, your website is communicarelearning.com, correct?
That is one of our websites.
Ooh, tell us more.
Tell us more.
Where else do we go?
So our main introductory, you know, first date website is our www.aaccommunicare.com, you know, for the background information and some resources on that page as well.
The one that I have bookmarked on my computer is the Communicare Learning one. But I would recommend you check them both out.
Excellent.
Yep. So that houses specifically our webinars, but clinical resources and tips and maybe a downloadable handout or, you know, the comment cards, that would be on our AACCommunicare.com. That's kind of our Communicare Clinical. And then we also have CampCommunicare.com. So
that's awesome.
Three spots.
That's awesome. We will link all of those in the show notes and on our episode webpage. And if our listeners have any questions, is there a way that they can contact you through those items, those websites?
Yeah. So on the website, there's a contact us. It goes right to our email, but you can also just shoot out an email to us at info@aaccommunicare.com.
Perfect. You guys are located in Massachusetts, and with TeleAAC, are there other states where you're licensed, where you practice? Like if any of our listeners around, you know, would like to, you know, share your contact information for any of those purposes.
We are also licensed in Connecticut, but the majority of our work is done in Massachusetts.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean we won't answer questions or share information or get really excited about someone else doing that work.
And helping collaborate and support them in that.
That's awesome. And like, that's fantastic. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up. We have enjoyed having you on here. We're going to convince you to come back because this was really so wonderful. Thank you everyone for joining us, and we will hopefully hear from you soon.